Vote and record and see what happens on 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16.
House Judiciary Committee, February 3rd, 1977, 1:30 p.m., room 354, take 7, side 1.
Committee will come to order. Clerk will note those members present, the balance are absent. Additional bills for committee introduction. I have three that have come from the Speaker's office. The first requires court to impose definite term of additional imprisonment upon person convicted of committing or attempting to commit felony while armed with certain firearms. Provides the term of additional imprisonment be served consecutively with and preceding any term of imprisonment imposed for the crime for which the person was convicted.
Excuse me. Does that follow?
I have
prior to and consecutive with?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think
is
it does.
It? Okay.
Second one permits plaintiffs in small claims actions for less than $50 to serve the defendant with summons and complaint by registered mail. Requires small claim departments to provide upon plaintiff's request a written explanation of how process may be served in a small claims action. And the third one changes references in ORS 163135 to conform with 1975 Act, which moved language of mental or emotional disturbance from ORS 163125 to ORS 163115. Any objection to the introduction of these as committee bills?
Point of information, Mr. Chairman, on the first one, is there a specified length of time mentioned?
Well, let's see. I think it's a series, yeah. It's first conviction, second conviction, 3, 5. The bill is simply going to come in as part of our corrections package to consider. Any objection to the introduction of these as committee bills? Not so ordered. Representative Frommeyer?
Mr. Chairman, I have three sets of bills that I'd like the committee to introduce. The first one was called my attention by Professor at the University of Oregon, pointed out that fees, the statute dealing with fees in small claims courts are not consistent. And the Legislative Council drafted a statute that would amend that to make those fees consistent. I drafted this bill. The second is hardly in the mainstream of judiciary action, but it is requested by the Oregon Municipal Finance Officers, and it relates to general obligation improvement warrants and cleans up the way they can deal with warrants, statute of limitations on them. And the third is a package of four bills. Four.
Well, you just read the summaries.
I was trying to find all the pieces of them. First one deals with the statute of limitations on products liability and would conform it to existing statutes of limitations. At least that's been drafted in the instruction. The second would follow an Alaska court decision and make the doctrine of comparative negligence applicable to products liability actions. Third would relate to, I only have two copies of this, maybe Dennis will have to make, if that's all right, make some more. Relates to the standards of evidence in actions for defective products and would, if changes in manufacturing are made after the date of the manufacture of the product, it wouldn't permit that introduction of evidence. And I apparently didn't get all the copies of my fourth one, so I'll hold off.
What you're saying then is you do have proper number of copies on this one,
No, I don't. It apparently got left in my office earlier. I don't know what it is.
Okay, we have full committee meetings tomorrow and Monday, so if you want to bring them either day. Right. Any objection to the introduction of these committee bills?
Mr. Chairman, just in the interest of full disclosure, these were requested of me to be drafted by Associated Bargaining Industries. Just having introduced this committee bill.
If it's shown as sponsored by committee on and has Representative Frohnmeyer typed in, they are to be judiciary bills.
Yeah,
any objection? Sorry. Representative Davis?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There's some literature. Yeah, I'm after the members.
Thank you. How are you?
Good.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Drew Davis. I represent House District 20 in Multnomah County. Today I come before you basically asking for an introduction of a piece of legislation that would repeal the ERA. I am not here suggesting that we repeal the ERA, except there's been a few ladies that are with the what they call the Eagle Forum that would like to review exactly what is in the ERA. Over the past year or so, there's been a lot of talk about what the implications of the ERA amendment will be if it's actually ratified to the full extent, such as they're going to draft women into the service. I don't know if that's good, bad, or indifferent, and that's why I'm not going to introduce the bill myself, full support of repealing the ERA. What I think these ladies would like is to at least have the Oregon legislature come in and let them testify, kind of have a forum so that the people that do have problems with it can come in and let us know. So what it is, it would just be a vehicle to allow them to speak and give their reservations about what the implications of it will be if it is ratified to all the way. So what I have before you today, the top copy there, is basically what they had drafted up for the repeal. It would have to go to legislative council to be put in the legal form, and I have not had that done before I came to you. For a simple reason, I don't want to have the legislature go to the expense of drafting a piece of legislation if there's not enough enthusiasm in this committee to introduce the bill. So I basically am asking, would there be enough interest in this committee to introduce it as a committee bill at the request of the Eagle Forum?
Is there a motion to authorize the chair to request legislative council to prepare for introduction of the bill as described?
So moved.
Representative Gardner moves the authorization of the request. Discussion on the motion.
I'd like to have a little clarification of our policy. I notice we have introduced a number of bills, sort of in a pro forma manner, and I just wonder if this is the policy, has been the policy in the past, how these things operate, or whether you reserve your right to accept from those committee-sponsored bills. What is the situation?
Well, I think that we have been generally acceding to at least the requests of members of this committee for the introduction of bills as committee bills, most of which have been shown at the request of such and such a person. But I personally think the committee members reserve the right to reject the committee's name in any respect being associated with a particular measure.
Have the bills that we've introduced up to this point been bills brought to us by members of this committee, is that right?
Well, most of them have been introduced as at the initiative of members of this committee who may have received the bills from other sources, the ones, for example, I brought in today. But the bottom line, so to speak, is that I think the committee isn't bound to follow any particular course on bills as far as introduction as committee bills.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Blumenauer.
We have, as a matter of routine, introduced bills that would be the committee or the committee staff felt would be necessary. And I would draw necessary vehicles for discussion through the course of the session. I draw a distinction here. This seems to me to, if there is an outside group or organization that is seriously concerned with the repeal of the ERA, this is just not the routine of a routine introduction of a matter that be considered by this committee. Representative Davis has already indicated that he doesn't feel strongly enough about it in terms of knowing if there's that much interest in the legislature. I would think that I would feel very uncomfortable for our committee sponsoring this bill because I think it would connote a number of things that I don't think we would mean by committee sponsorship. I have no interest in seeing us pursue to discuss something that I think is going to be meaningless. I think we're already on record as ratifying the ERA. I sat through those things in another committee in the 73 session. I have no desire to see us do that again unless there's some member that feels strongly enough about it that he or she is going to introduce that. And I would, with all due respect, Representative Davis and to the people that are advocating this, they still have 2 days in the House, two more session days in the House, and the better part of a month in the Senate. I'd feel much more comfortable if they would come down and find their own sponsors and have a formal bill drafted and introduced. I hope that we don't get in the habit of doing that in our through the Judiciary Committee or any other legislative committee if it's.
Representative Gardner.
It's kind of interesting. It seems like we have a double standard in at least one respect. Representative Frohmeyer introduces four bills to us today and says that basically they were drafted at the request of Associated Oregon Industries. And we ran through a quick summary.
It also happened to be my view.
Okay. and he wanted those bills introduced as committee bills. And as a matter of courtesy, we accepted those as committee bills. I made the motion basically because I don't know how I'm going to vote on if this issue does come before the legislature. I don't know how I'm going to vote, but I do feel that one of the most important things the legislature can do is to provide a forum. And Representative Davis has come to the committee and asked us to introduce the bill as a committee bill. That doesn't mean that we're on record as supporting it. I'm certainly not supportive of all the things that Representative Frohmeyer has put forward on the desk today to be accepted as committee bills. But I do feel that they have the right to have a fair airing, and if Representative Frohmeyer wants to have them as committee bills, I have no problem with that. The points that you made about having individual sponsorship, Sometimes there are politically sensitive issues. Sometimes bills are introduced as committee bills for the very reason that no one does want to put their name on them. But that doesn't mean that those issues aren't entitled or need a full airing. And I would speak in support of my motion for that reason.
Representative Richards?
Point of order, Mr. Chairman. In order for a bill to be introduced by the committee, does there have to be unanimous consent?
Majority members of the committee.
I register a no vote for the introduction of this as a committee bill.
Well, we're going to take a roll call on it. Further discussion?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Frommeyer.
I'm going to oppose introduction of this on the ground that I don't believe that ratification can be rescinded by a ratifying state once the act is officially taken. I don't think it's constitutionally possible. And I have told this group that in the correspondence.
Mr. Chairman. Representative, if I may respond or just reiterate basically what my intentions were is. Let me find out if there are other committee members that are going to say. Representative Lombard.
Well, I was only going to say that I, too, will oppose the motion. I have spoken on this before. I have some very definite reservations as a lawyer about the ERA and what its effect will be. But I feel that this matter has been, say, aired thoroughly before. And I think the forum has considered it. I see no real compelling reason to air it again. I think it's had its hearing.
Further discussion?
Have you had difficulty, or has this group had difficulty in finding a sponsor who could put this in so that it would get a hearing in the event that this committee shut the door?
Mr. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. That's why I've come before you. I could have just easily said, I'm not interested. I'm not going to introduce it. My personally want to introduce it for the simple reason if we want to speak about political reality, it's a hot political issue. And that's why I say I'm coming before you, not trying to repeal it or not trying to keep it in force. But there's a group of citizens out there that are very concerned, and we represent all facets, and they want to come and give their points of view on it. And these groups, this particular group was not formed at that time. When we did ratify, and there's been a lot of talk since we have and what the implications of the ERA might be by the committee chose, which I had a feeling probably will not today introduce it, is not showing that any of the members here are in favor of it. And that's why they've had from a number of legislators the statement that, well, we'd be glad to co-sponsor it. But we will not, I will not sponsor it, is basically what they're getting. And I simply feel the emotion of being sorry for them, I guess, that it is their legislature, they pay taxes. I would like maybe just have one hearing for them or something on the bill. But I am not myself ready to accept the political liability of introducing the bill, which all of us know that you put your name on a bill like that and you're automatically, you're behind it 100% and you're supporting what's written in that bill. That's why we have sponsorships and co-sponsorships on the front of bills. It basically says that you're pretty much in favor of what you put your name on. That's why I've come before a committee, because no one is saying really whether they're for it or against it all. Only that it should be discussed before the legislature. And that's really all I'm asking is that we give this group, and they really believe in what they're trying to do, all we do is give them the opportunity to be heard. They're just asking for an ear. So
further discussion?
Thank you.
It's 5 minutes to two. I'd like to bring this to a vote. We've got a long work session. Representative Frommeyer?
Yeah, just very quickly, Drew. You know, there is a meaning of recourse, which you can urge them to use if you're not successful in finding co-sponsors or if this committee doesn't approve it. And that's a petition. We call first reading petitions, memorials, and resolutions. Any group of people, it's a very seldom used practice, but it is legal. Any group of people can draft, in essence, a bill and have that submitted directly to the assembly as a petition, which will then go through the regular lawmaking process of assignment to committee. that is at least feasible recourse by which they can get it before approval.
Can be done. Thank you. Further discussion? Clerk, call the roll.
Representative Blumenauer?
Nope.
Representative Cronemeyer?
No.
Coons? Lombard?
No.
Richards?
No.
Rutherford?
No.
Gardner?
Aye.
Cronemeyer?
No.
May we enter into the record?
Yes.
I just like to enter into the record that I voted against it, among other reasons, for the reason that I think this would encourage many groups to come to the judiciary committee, which is already overloaded, and we would have to have hearings on whether or not we would introduce bills. And I think that the better procedure is either to find a sponsor or to proceed by petition.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to thank you and the committee for taking your time.
Thank you for coming by. House Bill 2203.
Chairman, this bill was heard in work session on January 26th, and at that time, the committee decided to put off further consideration until it received a fiscal impact statement from legislative fiscal. And at this time, you've received that. It should be in your folders. Or,
I think it's outside as a separate sheet.
So you might consider that.
Chairman.
Representative Blumenauer.
Don't judges have secretaries?
Sure they do.
What do they call them?
I call enough judges who are in dictation. What's that second category?
Probably attorney three, law clerk.
Attorney, okay. A is
they have three administrative assistants.
That would have to be the thing.
Discussion on the bill. Representative Lombard.
I think, as I recall, at one of the previous work sessions, or after the hearings on the bill, you made some comment about looking to the possibility of going, looking ahead based on what Judge Schwab told us of what he felt the court might be doing 4 years hence, or next session, of looking to going to a 2+2 arrangement. Has anybody looked into that any further beyond what we've already worked on, public hearings?
I have not looked into it further, just to have given it really more thought, and I still think that particularly if the committee believes that an investment of general appellate jurisdiction in the Court of Appeals is something that should be done, and probably next session, that it makes some sense to start moving in that direction now, and a 2+2 formula would not cost us any more during this biennium. I would suggest that if that were to be the committee's wish, we might authorize introduction of a bill, drafting an ultimate introduction of a bill which would permit the Supreme Court to transfer on a discretionary basis cases in the meantime, or to take them back, for that matter, but improve that flexibility during the coming biennium.
Well, it certainly it would be my feeling that if enough members of the committee, and for purposes of further discussion, I would certainly lend my support to at least exploring this transition and exploring this possibility and doing so at this time.
Representative Frommer?
Yeah, let's just bite the bullet on this one. It seems to me fruitless to wait another couple of years for this thing to happen. I think maybe we're voting three judges all at once, we're without changing the jurisdiction that we'd just be putting off the inevitable. I don't believe we need a study commission for that. So I would propose we go on a 2+2 formula, and if I can combine them both in the same motion, I would propose that our staff or legislative council or both draft a bill which would give the Supreme Court discretionary power to transfer classes of jurisdiction to the Court of Appeals from the Supreme Court, effective, let's say, a year from now.
All right. The motion, as I understand it, would be to amend the bill. First, to amend the bill to provide for an additional 4 judges to the Court of Appeals, 2 for the fiscal year beginning July 1, '77, and 2 for the fiscal year beginning July 1, '78. And the second part of the motion is to authorize the chair to have drafted for introduction by the committee a bill which would permit the discretionary transfer of classes of cases now within the jurisdiction of the Supreme Court to the Court of Appeals during the coming biennium. Is that a correct statement of the motion? Discussion on the motion. Representative Lombard.
Okay, then the only boogeyman I bring back is the bill that we considered the other day that would have, we talked about transferring some cases of original jurisdiction, mandamus, habeas corpus, and quo warranto, or giving the discretion of the Supreme Court to pawn those off onto the Court of Appeals. And I'm assuming that on those constitutional cases of initial jurisdiction that we do not want to, in this motion, give that authority to the Supreme Court to pass that back.
No, that's a separate
bill.
What
I'm
talking about is
classes of appellate jurisdiction.
The Supreme Court says, all the automobile accident cases this year get heard first by the Court of Appeals. All workman's comp get heard by the Court of Appeals.
However,
they divided it up so that they're not transferring one case at a time, but rather classes of cases. Subject matter.
Representative Luminero.
I will support the motion. I think we ought to be on with the business. I would only comment, Mr. Chairman, we have done this privately, and I just for the record, I'm concerned that we really don't consider alternative ways to spend $500,000 to improve whatever problems that the Supreme Court, the Circuit Court, are facing at this point in time. And I don't know if there are more effective ways in terms of maybe they'd be helped if they had secretaries instead of administrative assistants. If they're mechanical or procedural, or if it is just all centered in the with a problem of the too few judges. But at some point, I would like, maybe it's just so obvious to everybody else that it need not be brought before the committee, and it's just my naivete in the subject area. But I just feel a tad bit uncomfortable that no one talked about alternative ways of using these resources. And my mind can think of ways to spend $500,000 and I hope that at some point in time, somebody, somewhere, at least addresses it so those of us that aren't as informed as some of you would have more confidence this is the best possible way to spend it.
Representative Frommeyer?
Well, I think that we did, in fact, talk about that, at least at one, were you at the subcommittee hearing and talked to Joe Schwab?
Yeah. Yes.
Well, I've since talked to other judges. There aren't that many options. It's clear that the Court of Appeals right now is at the end of its tether. It's already deciding more cases from the bench than probably the main appellate court in the country is in terms of speeding things up. The caseload they have is higher than almost any other appellate court in the country. But they're just deciding cases. They are no longer developing law. Problem is that that's what the Supreme Court is in too. The Supreme Court is not a lawmaking court right now. Court justices do not, they're sitting first of all with 2 full-time pro tems. It's as large as it can be as a collegial body and still function. They don't have time in their conferences really to sit down comprehensively and go through the better rule as opposed to the worse rule. And they are acutely aware of the need for appellate help so that the Court of Appeals can continue to engage in the case-sifting and fact-sifting function, while the highest court in the state has some capability of reassuming its role as a policy articulator. You only have so many ways to go. You can say, you know, once you've been heard by the Court of Appeals, then it's discretionary at the Supreme Court. I think that's bad. You can say that you'll cut off all criminal appeals at the Court of Appeals. I think that's not doing justice. There are only so many ways you can model a court system, and I'm convinced that we've heard the straight story from the court.
Representative Blumenauer.
The only response I'd make, David, is that all we had recounted for us is essentially what you said. And it just reminds me of what we hear sometimes from professional educators and other people that come to parade before us that have a pretty limited agenda of what they want. I'm not persuaded that we've had explored for our benefit all the other alternatives. But the only substantive evidence that was given was that their backlog, which is the only index that was suggested to this committee for evaluating it, has been cut from 418 days, the number from 408, I think it was 418 days, to 165 days since the Court of Appeals was established. That's the only index that was given to us. And we were also told that the 150 days is an absolute minimum. It doesn't sound to me like they're crippled, just based on the only index that they offered. And I don't mean to belabor it, but I really don't think, with all due respect, that they adequately covered that before this committee, or that it's forthcoming. I think at some point it should be.
Representative Gardner.
Call for the question.
No. Further discussion.
Yeah.
Is that a motion to close debate, or are you just simply suggesting that you're moving to terminate debate?
Yeah, I'm going to roll call.
Representative Gardner moves that debate be closed. See, I believe that requires a two-thirds under our rules or a majority vote. I think it's two-thirds to close debate in the committee. Clerk, call the roll.
No.
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 Lombard?
No.
Representative Richards?
No.
Representative Rutherford?
No.
Representative Gardner?
Aye.
Representative Myers?
No. Motion defeated. Further discussion? Representative Kulongoski.
So I can understand, Earl, I take it you're concerned even about the three judges.
What I'm concerned with is that we've never had treated what options the money would buy. It's three judges, four judges. If it's judges, I'm all in favor of going as far and as fast as we can. If that's the only alternative that would be explored, I feel a little uncomfortable that for some of us lay people, we
your feelings are directed toward the bill itself. It's three judges, regardless if David wants to go to, propose we go to six here within a stagger time frame. Isn't that what he was referring to?
Four, two and two.
So the numbers don't bother you as much as
the process.
Okay.
I don't think we'd let anybody else do that if they came in and asked for a 50% increase in their staff.
Just one other question for David, if I can. Has anyone talked to Judge Schwab at all about it, if we knock him off of his time schedule, as to what effect this will have? Is he in favor of it?
Yes, I spoke to him this morning. I said I'm considering moving either the three judges or two plus two. Would you have any problem with that? No.
Two this year, two next. Two by July 1.
Two or even
July
1,
and then two after July 1, 78. Okay. I understand.
Representative Lombard.
Because we're going, I think, significantly different from the proposal here, and as I understand it, this will require, maybe I'm wrong, is this going to require an amendment to this bill?
Well, I'm not sure whether it requires an amendment beyond simply stating it shall consist of 10 judges.
My point was I would certainly not be adverse. I think it's a significant enough, important enough decision to further public testimony on this, possibly from members of the trial bar who could relate to experiences or how they feel with the differing roles of the Supreme Court and the Court of Appeals go on, and for the members of the court, including the Supreme Court. I think
not have any testimony from anybody from the Supreme Court, from their vantage point on the discussion that Judge Fong gave. So that's just personal feeling. Representative Bugis.
Well, I probably am suffering from the same difficulty as Earl, but that is laymanism. But I had lunch the other day, quite by accident, with Judge Tanzer, and we got into this very quickly. About three words we were into this bill. But the point is, the point is that he made the comment. I didn't bring it up that they were. He was adding another clerk to expand his ability, and I compliment him on what Judge Schwab had said about the good job of which they are accelerating the case load they're handling, and apparently doing it, according to the testimony, as I recall, is well or better than any other similar structured court system in the country. I don't think it rankles my lay soul to rush out here and give him four more when I think really urging some more clerks. Now, he said additionally, so I don't mistake it, that there's a limit beyond which you can, you know, you can't hire six clerks and get six times as much done, or even maybe twice as much, but you can hire one or two or three more, maybe, or a couple, he said, kind of in little gym, maybe one more in certain cases. And I think he said Judge Schwab is using three now. So maybe Judge Schwab is limited to this kind of special assistance. Maybe the others aren't. And I think there's something to worry about. I think you can maybe partition not quite this much money around amongst some not so high powered people and get this much volume and this good quality. These people aren't writing extensive new law. It isn't their function, as I understand the distinction between appeals and the Supreme Court. And they do divide up into threes and smaller groups. And I think it's a gratuitous expenditure of money in the judicial system in this particular case to expand their request.
Further
maybe
discussion?
They're better off with two and some more law clerks. We haven't really explored that.
Further discussion? Representative Gardner?
I think Representative Blumenauer's point is well taken in the sense that it seems to me that we don't have any criteria, and I get a gut feeling that it's the type of a situation which, you know, we can spend the money and you can always do better, but at some point the cost is to the benefit. It becomes prohibitively expensive to get what you have. Like every hospital could have a medical scanner. You know, we could cut down the appeal time from 165 days down to 95 days if we put six more judges on. And at some point, though, the length of time that it takes or the workload or something basically becomes the benefit that you get by having the extra money and the time spent just isn't worthwhile. And it may be that there's a great need for position that Representative Frommeyer takes, but I agree with Representative Blumenauer that we haven't had the substantive evidence that would convince me of that. And I'd also advocate the position taken by Representative Blumenauer that if in fact we're going to take a step where we're going to be spending probably, what, $700,000 more dollars, that we at least have some more hearings and get some more information so we can make a rational decision.
What's the 700,000?
Well, you're talking, this is with three judges here.
No, but the 2 + 2 is the same cost.
As this.
It's three for 2 years. Two and two will be the same as three for 2 years.
Okay, I would, well, $466,000.
The fiscal impact is the same.
You have, four people on the bench from then on forever.
Well, I don't think that the proposal should be seen divorced from the ultimate question of the transfer of the jurisdiction. Although I happen to think personally that the court has done an exceptionally fine job in terms of its individual workload, and that probably three judges given the imponderables of the new district court appellate situation, may not be all that generous in terms of just current workload maintenance. I don't know. I don't know if it was Jefferson Gardner or who that drew out the fact that the court's projection of workload with respect to three judges had a very large question mark in it about what the impact of Senate Bill 48 was going to have to be. Further discussion on the motion. Representative Blum.
I wanted to point again, I agree with what you said, and I think everybody hit it on the nail on the head, is that we have to look at this in the light of the problem at the Supreme Court level and not just at the Court of Appeals level. When it comes to talking about the role of clerks, I, as a representative of litigants before a Court of Appeals that basically deciding cases, have less of a problem with clerks doing the work and basically giving the opinions to the judges to turn out. I have more of a problem with the Supreme Court level and increasing the number of clerks and having them do the work, because there I think it is significant that we have the judges' input and the judges primarily behind those opinions. And so that's why I say that in considering the context of the two, I think we have to consider both. We may very well be able to increase the productiveness at the Court of Appeals level by using more clerks. Quite frankly, I wouldn't mind hearing more evidence on this, but certainly considering the two, the problem at the Supreme Court level, I don't think that the addition of clerks at the Supreme Court level is really what we want.
Further discussion on the motion.
One tiny point, if I may.
Representative Blumenauer.
The example of clerks came out, I guess that's the only thing that occurs to some of us. I'm just curious, there might well be some technology that can be employed here, or other staffing patterns beyond just clerking.
Further discussion?
Just briefly, so when we take the vote, I'm not so opposed to the concept of two. What I am concerned about is the desire for it appears to be the majority of the committee members that we have for the additional hearing on the proposal of increasing the number of judges on the Court of Appeals, whatever the number is. And because of that, I'm going to vote against the motion, merely because I would like to see the court satisfy the members of the committee and come back in and talk to them about the judges that they're asking for.
Your motion embodies the drafting of either an additional bill or amendments, so you're not foreclosing action.
No, it is drafted as a committee bill. I didn't have to go into the hopper and come back out for hearing anyway.
So implicit in what your motion would be what Kip was talking about, where we have people coming back here, and we will be able to spend them.
Well, I'm the last guy to want to cut. If there is significant clientele of the public that has to be heard, then they ought to be heard. That can be facilitated with this committee's operation. Dennis would still have to draft it and come back with it, whether we plug it in or not.
Why do you draft a whole new bill? And why can't we use the vehicle?
Well, I don't think that we can't use this bill to deal, I don't think, with the Supreme Court's transfer of jurisdiction. I don't know that. But I understood the follow-up from this motion, if it's approved, would be that the committee would report this bill to the floor with respect to whatever number and sequencing of judges it decides upon. To follow its subsequent referral to Ways and Means, and then we would have before us separately a bill dealing with the discretionary transfer on which we can have hearings.
That's why I said that I'm not in favor of that until they get the question. They get their question answered. I thought most of the concern went to the issue.
My motion assumes that we'd be having a bill drafted to look at.
And I'll follow I'm going to vote in favor of the motion to make the amendment. I will take my concerns to the Ways and Means Subcommittee and will not burden this here further.
Let me start over again. I'm confused as to what the motion did. Maybe everybody.
The motion, let me just state,
okay,
the motion will amend the bill to provide for 10 judges on the Court of Appeals, 2 for fiscal year beginning July 1, 1977, 2 for fiscal year July 1, 1978.
And you intend to send that bill to the floor?
That's
to
the end of it with respect
right
to this bill, right.
Okay.
The second part of the motion is to authorize the committee to have legislative council draft for committee introduction and hearing a bill which would permit discretionary transfer by classes of case by the Supreme Court to the Court of Appeals during the coming budget. Is in the same motion.
I would move to divide the motion.
All right, let's take the question with respect to the bill first. Is that agreeable? Further discussion on the 2 and 2 portion of the motion.
Very short. Perhaps it's just my inexperience that I just, the only figure that I have, that I have written down here, that I can remember from testimony, is the caseload is increasing. Okay. It has increased dramatically. The number of appeals in 1969 was 628, in 1976 was 1,847, with 360 disciplinary cases. And yet, the time from notice to decision has decreased, altering that time.
But that has been accomplished by the use of pro tem judges. That is extremely undesirable on the appellate court. It's been accomplished by the increasing use of oral opinions. That part isn't bothered so much. I think the pro tem part is very, very unsatisfactory, having judges come in.
The chairman has got some bad feedback from some protesters.
No. But I just think as a matter of judicial administration of justice, I think it's a very undesirable feature of our present
A little humor there, Mr. Chairman.
I understand that. Depending on the court, you might have been, you know, zeroing right in representing the judges. I just wanted to make it clear for the record you were not correct in this case. Clerk, call the roll.
Representative Blumenauer?
Aye.
Hugen?
No.
Cronemeyer?
Aye.
Kulongowski?
Aye.
Lombard?
Aye.
Richard?
Aye.
Rutherford?
Aye.
Gardner?
Aye.
Meyer?
Aye. Passes. Second part of the motion relates.
The motion was merely to amend the bill. And we moved to send the bill out. That's it. That, we didn't move to send the bill to floor, did we?
I thought that was in the motion.
Yeah. I thought the motion was to amend the bill.
All right. I'm not going to play games with the committee. The question is on reporting the bill with the new pass recommendation as amended. Further discussion on that. It has a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
This bill was originally heard in the subcommittee to which I am not assigned, and I feel as uncomfortable or more so than members of the committee who heard it in subcommittee about the lack of substantive evidence, and would appreciate more hearings on a recommendation coming out of this committee and have this kind of fiscal impact before it goes to the floor.
Well, I think these bills were actually heard in full committee, weren't they? The judges' bills were full committee bills.
I'm not so sure. They were in this room, and I think
They were scheduled for full committee. They're full committee. Representative Lombard.
Well, I don't know what the procedure is, Mr. Chairman, but I would request, you know, whether it takes the form of a request or a formal motion, I would request that they make available a further hearing date on this proposal. I know it increases the burden and the load of this committee, but I myself feel more comfortable sending it out of this committee and having a good handle on the progression of hearing.
Representative Gardner?
Will you yield to a question?
Why or what?
No, he.
Yeah.
What is it in the way of statistics that you want?
Well,
you want to hear from the trial lawyers?
Well, the thing is, I would like to hear from, if any of the members of the bar would be, you know, desirous to testify, and I would like to hear from them. I would like to, I'd like to get an expression of opinion from the Supreme Court. Because I look at this thing not only that, you know, that we're proposing a 2+2 in this arrangement, which is really quite different from what was proposed to us originally, but also chasing it with a bill that removes some of the jurisdiction of the Supreme Court. Now,
Myself, I've had some private conversations with Judge Schwab, and I think that David has, and I feel pretty comfortable with what he tells me. But I question whether I am doing my duty as a legislator just to accept that that one expression, that one viewpoint, without at least having the opportunity and soliciting the opinions of other individuals.
Representative Gardner?
I can't, well, you can get an expression of opinion, I suppose, from the Supreme Court or from the trial lawyer, for whatever that's worth, and they did have the opportunity to come and testify on the bill, and didn't avail themselves of that. I can't think of any statistics that you could get further beyond what we've got to justify what we have. Now, I feel very uncomfortable with the statistics we have in spending this much money, but I suppose maybe it's a question where you've got to just take it on faith, because you can't get into the everyday workings of the judiciary to the point where you know whether the money is being actually very well spent or not.
I thought I was doing it in part to help you with your earlier concern. So,
Representative Kulongoski.
I disagree that the bar had the opportunity, because as I understand, the second part of the motion is going to be that we have a bill drafted to grant basically the court general jurisdiction. And I don't think that the bar or any of the lawyers that I know of, or even the circuit court judges or the Supreme Court judges, were aware that we were going to do that.
But they'll get their chance to come in when the bill is drafted and comes before the committee.
But that bill is going to have
it out.
Well, I don't imagine Ways and Means is going to be acting on it anytime soon.
Bill, it raises another point. I think it has probably been more than anything you've said. The fiscal implications of this are going to be determined by Ways and Means, regardless of what our viewpoint about it is. I am more interested in the substance of the issue of whether, in fact, it's the issue of general jurisdiction, and I feel somewhat that when you send half of it out, what you are saying, the committee's already adopted that position, because that's the reason why you're asking for 4-2 and 2.
That's not right. Not quite right.
Representative Frommeyer.
The reason it's not right is that we know that by 1980, the court is going to need 12 people, irrespective of their okay? So building before 1980.
Yeah, but would, David, do you still want the four judges if you do not have the court to go to a court of general jurisdiction this term?
I don't think that there is that necessary if you don't have some transfer of jurisdiction. I don't see any reason to hold up a flight of Ways and Means of this bill. It's going to be held up there anyway. Every day we drag it on, we're going to increase the chance of getting anybody on that court.
The only thing that bothers me is Herb said, Judge Schwab said that he only needed two judges if, in fact, the jurisdiction basically stayed the same. And that's why he said that he recommended two and the bar recommended three. And the reason he did not oppose the additional judges, he said we could find something for him to do. Now, I interpreted that to mean that unless we change the jurisdiction of the court substantially, he's going to have difficulty finding things for three of them to do. Now, am I incorrect about what his testimony was?
What I thought he said.
Well, there's something that he said that we were going to find for him to do was either rotate the court of appeals judges to the circuit court where there's overflow so that they can have some contact again with the trial bench, which he felt was a good thing. It's not that they're going to be shelving books or sitting idle.
No, no, I meant more in the functioning of an appellate judge.
Done well. Ways and Means is not going to give three judges, let alone two and two, if there's not evidence that the workload will be readjusted. So I suppose we work on while we let them form it
up. We bring up our substantive questions with the motion to change jurisdiction.
The plain fact is that when the Court of Appeals bill was adopted originally, at that point, the legislature, at least at that time, I'm sure saw itself moving toward an ultimate goal, sooner than later, a total appellate jurisdiction in the first step in the Court of Appeals.
and the bifurcation that was made has no rational basis to it. It's just a matter of convenience. Now, I don't know where the organized bar is going to stand on the question. It is, of course, ultimately a legislative decision. But no one who had any connection with the creation of that court originally, I think, would be able to say it wasn't the expected objective to put all appellate jurisdiction in that court.
Mr. Chairman, just a moment, stop. The only thing that appears to me is that Judge Schwab is telling other members other than things, or statements other than what he told us. And I definitely got the impression he heard wanted to wait until 4 years to go to the court now.
You're not talking about, and that's not the motion. The motion is the power of discretionary transfer in the biennial. Excuse me, I mean, you're following me. It's not the same as saying it's going to be transferred.
I'm not saying anything that contradicts anything.
Further discussion on the motion.
Question, Mr. Chairman, I apologize for being late to announce here, but where did the idea come? Where did the idea originate for this committee to originate another bill which would allow the Supreme Court to divest itself of some of its jurisdiction to the appellate? Okay, earlier today. Is this the first time?
No,
that was broached in the first hearing.
Was it?
Yeah, in fact, I'm sure that I asked Judge Schwab about it.
Yeah, but I mean, at no time between then and now has there been talk of a bill, right? Until today.
That's correct.
Further discussion.
Please speak to the motion.
Question is on passage of the bill to the floor with a due pass recommendation, subject to subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
This is the 2+2.
As amended.
What?
As amended.
As amended. 2+2. Clerk will call the roll.
Representative Blumenauer.
Aye.
Mugen.
No.
Cronmeyer.
Aye.
Kuligowski.
No.
Lombard.
No.
Richard.
No.
Rutherford.
Aye.
Gardner.
Aye.
Kuligowski.
Aye. Passed. Second part of the motion is to authorize the drafting for hearing and perhaps ultimate introduction, if approved, not introduction, the drafting and introduction for hearing and consideration by the committee of a bill which would permit the discretionary transfer by class of cases from the Supreme Court to the Court of Appeals during the 77-79 biennium. Further discussion on that part of the motion. Clerk will call the roll on the second part.
Representative Blumenauer?
Aye.
Representative Bugis?
Aye.
Cronmeyer?
Aye.
Kuligowski?
No.
Lombard?
Aye.
Richard?
Aye.
Rutherford?
Aye.
Gardner?
Aye.
Myers?
Aye. Approved. House Bill 2205, Circuit Judges.
Mr. Chairman, this bill was considered in a work session on January 26th, and a motion to have the bill approved was held off while Representative Bugis obtained further information as to the need for the judges that the bill would create.
Yeah, was that an introduction we were talking
about? So the point is that where we left it, we were waiting to hear from Representative Bugis as to his further feelings on the need for the judgeship.
Well, I did not hear further, Mr. Chairman. I made a contact. Let's pass that one. There's no further testimony that I'm aware of that any other judge wants to make. But I would like, if I may, while I have the floor, to comment that I'm uneasy with this bill for a couple of reasons. One is that the bar doesn't seem to have any kind of criteria. The court administration officer, I forget what Lawrence title is, came up here with some statistical data that seemed to call for priorities different from those contained in the bill. And while I'm not trying to do violence to anybody's need in anybody's district, I think that there might be some finite criteria that are developable that are better than this to guide us in the creation of circuit judicial position. And I know this has been a matter that comes up every session somewhere, and with a huge variation in numbers of cases that first get presented to these judges, I just think it needs more work, and I would be willing, as I told Dennis in private conversation earlier today, to sit with a committee either comprised of maybe a person or two from this body and maybe somebody from the bar and somebody from Lauren's office and talk about establishing some criteria for some future, if nothing else, for the future legislative sessions. I think they came up with a list that doesn't mean much when you look at their criteria. And maybe I'm, again, suffering from Langmanism, but I think there's a better way to pick judges than just have them come in here and ask for them and we pick certain.
No, I all these lawyers on the committee keep referring to themselves as laymanly. I'm trying to have it both.
I mean, I should say non-practicing. Non-practitioner.
Representative Gardner.
I would echo those comments 100%. One of the things that was most amazing to me as we went through all the statistics and cases filed, cases terminated, cases pending, when we got down to Lane County, which was high on the bar's recommendation for additional judgeships, circuit judgeships, and when the statistics did not look good for Lane County, the gentleman came forth with a comment saying, you can't really take these statistics because they don't mean anything. And he may or may not be right, but the concern I have is if he is right, you know, we either have one or two options, as I see it, either develop the criteria and assume the responsibility of forwarding ways and means of some kind of priority list on these judgeships or the ones that we approve. Or secondly, abrogating the responsibility and just pass them all down there and say, hack at them.
Further discussion? Representative Frommeyer.
Yeah, I just don't believe that there aren't criteria. It seems to me that we did hear from every court of every county that was represented with respect to the problems that they had or docket and otherwise. There are some problems with the statistics, but I don't agree with Representative Gardner. They don't show that Lane County doesn't need the judicial help. I have the added advantage, and might as well put it on the table for you. My father has been a pro tem judge for a number of years county commission in Lane County and has had a chance to see the way that bench functions. He's also been, of course, in almost every county courtroom in the state as a comparative view. And I respect his elaboration of the problems we have in Lane County, and I take at face value those problems that are told to us by all the other courts. The judicial administrator's office has been around the state, and they may not have all the statistical data, but they certainly have impressionistic views of the needs of the various counties, and I think that they are in agreement with the priority ranking of these judgeships. You know, we can try to cut statistics thousands of different ways, but they can be, that can be as ultimately going to be inclusive. What I think, when we have the witnesses who testified before us, and when we have the state court administrator view of the priorities, it seems to me that we've done our job.
Representative Gardner.
Will you yield to the question?
Yes.
You heard the judge testify from Lane County. Lane County's filings, as I remember, were much lower than most of the other counties that
not so not the cases decided per judge in one biennium appeared to be lower. But that depends upon what each county counts as a case disposition. And the judges to whom I subsequently talked mentioned that their way of counting cases and handling merit decisions are different than the way it's done in Multnomah County. There's a variation in the way
So you're saying that basically, because we have a variation of statistics and you count yours a different way, that I should accept the face, well, or that I should accept the Lane County judge's statements at face value that he needs additional judges there, because there is a work one. I don't live in Lane County. I don't know.
The testimony was filing for judge in Lane County was number two in the state.
Well, you know, one problem I think has come to light is that regardless of what decision might be made on the basis of whatever data are provided, we don't have the same definitions being given to the same kind of data in every county. And I think that's a problem. This committee has some responsibility to help get straightened out.
Well, I think
this same thing is going to happen year after year after year. Representative Linnell.
Mr. Chairman, in reading the bill, I have a little difficulty. Mine's printed and crooked. Now, if we're going to move to amend line 4, is it line 14, if you want to change that from 9 to 8, would it be on line 14?
Yes, that's where it appears it would be. And line 16.
It wasn't clear to me.
Are there any motions with respect to this bill we should begin focusing our discussion on? Representative Kulongoski moves the bill to the floor of the due pass, subject, of course, to its subsequent referral to Ways and Means. Discussion on that motion. Representative Rutherford.
I was going to say, now we have a motion on the floor. It seems to me our consideration should be judicial administration, that Ways and Means jurisdiction is the funding. So what our analysis would circle around is whether or not we think that for property that judicial administration would need to be judges under certain criteria that we do and we set forth with respect to each of these. One of them is population, one of them is requirements, and one of them is cases tried or decided. With respect to the first two, we didn't see any need to dispute any definitional problems. With respect to the third, the case tried, we did seem to be some difference of opinion, but I don't know what other criteria you use, because the cases filed are going to be a function of population and requirements. The only other possible activity that I can think of is commercial activity in the area. But that would be hard to know what kind of relationship that would have with the number of cases filed. So it seems to me that we have the evidence upon which we can make a decision. And if we have the first-hand knowledge of certain members of the committee in their particular areas, and I think that is basis enough upon which to decide the question of judicial administration. What Ways and Means decides the money, that's not our area.
Further discussion on the motion?
Well, I think, Mr. Chairman, if I may, I think a couple of factors that you could take into account, and I think there'd be a way to do it. We heard a great deal of discussion about the quality of judicial help in Lane County, and I respect that. But I think you could put a weighted factor in. You heard some others about travel, you know, like in Cruz Curry. That could be a criteria factor. I cannot believe that there's not a better way than apparently the bar or somebody, maybe it was the judicial administrator, who could hardly be very coldly objective about this, working for them. But it wouldn't scare me. I'm never going to practice. to go to work on some criteria. I'm not inferring that you gentlemen are, but I mean, are frightened.
Well, I don't.
But I think really that it's an imperfect and very haphazard way to give these people judges.
Well, the question of travel came up in the earlier hearing with respect to that. I think they came up in the Multnomah County hearing, and the judge pointed out that the difficulty of transferring judges around between classrooms working in Multnomah County. That's one very good reason, because sometimes when you start a case, you're not aware of how long it's going to be. You might put a judge in a courtroom on Monday in Multnomah County, and you've got a case going out to trial on Tuesday. Case in Multnomah County runs into Tuesday, or even Wednesday. Now what happens to this case in Washington County on Tuesday and Wednesday? You could get yourself in some real trouble.
Representative Kulongoski?
Just briefly, as far as a practitioner and a citizen before the Lane County Bar, I happen to believe, personally, be opposed to the concept of 14 very much. I realize it's a necessity I'll have to live with. I don't think there's any doubt that Lane County utilizes the testimony of at least two pro tems on a fairly regular basis. I think that one use of pro tem seriously challenges what I said before, what in the world we elect judges, why we elect judges. And I think that in my experience before the bench, I have to have a great respect for it, but I also think that the workload on it is considerable, and I think that the judges that have been requested and recommended by the bar are a reflection of the particular bench standard. And I personally think that they are entitled, they need to, whether they're entitled to them is going to be something else. But I do believe that they do need two additional judges on the circuit court bench standard.
Further discussion? Representative Gardner?
I just have a question, and I don't know who can answer. Perhaps I'll address it. Sure. When this bill goes, if it does go in fact the Ways and Means, how will they approach it? Will they approach it either on the basis that they will approve everything, or will they cut out item by item certain judgeships down to a certain amount, determining which ones they should pass? Just how will that begin? Can someone answer that?
Last session was handled, and you'll see the exact same presentation that they put on here. They will then have to take it all downstairs. Ways and Means will make the same go from the social model. Whether they grant one, two, none, and I'm quite sure if Representative Blumenauer wanted to get two more circuit court judges for Multnomah County, that he could go down to Ways and Means and argue quite forcefully for it, and it might be that the only people that end up with circuit court judges this next year is Multnomah County.
No need to personalize.
Oh, I didn't mean to personalize. A little
just,
levity.
Just describe the process, will you? Further questions? Representative Gardner?
I'm running for mayor of Portland, not a circuit court judge.
Representative Gardner?
I have no further questions.
Further discussion on the motion? Clerk will call the roll.
This is on the new pass.
Yes.
Representative Blumenauer?
Aye.
Uga?
Nope.
Schoenmeyer?
Aye.
Kulongoski?
Aye.
Lombard?
Aye.
Richard?
No.
Rutherford?
Aye.
Gardner?
No.
Meyer?
Aye. Approved. I would like, for one thing, to have a follow-up by the committee in connection with this problem of definitions for the data that we are getting out of the court administrative system. And I'd like to have the staff, have Dennis, give us an evaluation of what's required right now by statute in terms of reporting requirements to the courts, how it's set forth. I'd like to see whatever rules or definitions the administrator or the Supreme Court, whoever, have promulgated for the guidance of the county. I want to see what it is that we're working with right now in terms of a framework for developing this information. Anyone else have any additional requests that we could use as a basis for following up discussions with Mr. Hicks? I don't know whether this would lead to any statutory amendments, but it could, in terms of the responsibilities of the court and the administrator. Representative Frommeyer?
This is too late. I wanted to do anything on the subject. I suppose that I should technically announce a potential conflict of interest vis-a-vis the judgeship created in the county. I also hereby disclaim any interest whatsoever in being appointed in the remote likelihood that the government would look in my direction. I
would ask that his motion be separated, and I will concur with the first.
Would you take it if offered?
House Bill 2270.
Mr. Chairman, House Bill 2270 was heard by Subcommittee C on February 1st. This bill, 2270, deals with ORS 113.225, which speaks to publication of notice to interested persons, mainly creditors, in a state in which the personal representative originally appointed by the court dies, resigns, or is otherwise removed. If the need for a new personal representative arises within 4 months after the first publication, then under the existing law, the law as it is now, the successor personal representative has to publish a new notice giving his name and address, etc., so that the creditors may make their claims to him. Under the existing law, it seems that the period for filing claims is extended by a period equal to the time between the time you lose the old personal representative and the time the new one is appointed. There's that period when there's nobody to make your claim to is tacked on, it's seemingly under the law tacked on to the period for during which creditors may make claims so that they get their full 4 month period no matter how you cut it. There's always somebody there in the receiving end. However, there also seems to be in some counties a procedure under which if a new personal representative is appointed or authorized by the court, a brand new 4 month period running, so that there's some seemingly difference of practice as to how long the creditors have if you have a situation in which you switch personal representative. The bill before you makes uniform the requirement of a full 4 month period for making claims after the successor personal representative publishes notice, and it makes other housekeeping changes in language. You should notice that the bill may appear to be only a housekeeping bill, and in many ways that was the way it was presented to us, or to the subcommittee, but in fact the bill does potentially extend the time required for probate by up to 4 months, and in that fashion gives an extra break to creditors or any other person interested in the disposition of the estate. The subcommittee recommended that this bill receive a due pass treatment, vote. And one final thing, Representative Frohnmeyer asked me to research the Uniform Probate Code to see whether the language of the bill was taken from or departed from the Uniform Probate Code, and my research indicates that in terms of language, the Uniform Probate Code doesn't even come close to discussing this issue. I should repeat that. Representative Frohnmeyer asked that I research the Uniform Probate Code tie-in with this, the language of this bill, and as far as I can tell, there is no tie-in. The language of the bill before you is homegrown.
Subcommittee's recommendation constitutes a motion to the full committee for action. Is there discussion on the motion to send the bill to the floor with a due pass recommendation?
So moved.
All right. That motion is before us. Is there any discussion on it? Clerk will call the roll.
Excuse me. That's all right. Mr. Chairman, the language of 113.155, which specifically deals with the kind of notice that's rendered, states in subparagraph A, a newspaper published in the county in which the estate proceeding is pending, or if no newspaper is published in the county in which the estate is proceeding is pending, a newspaper designated by the court. May I ask if it is the practice that such notices are published in publications like the Daily Journal of Commerce?
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, with a circulation of about 10,000 in a metropolitan area of 500,000 and a subscription rate of $45 per year, does that give notice to those persons interested in the disposition of the state?
I'm not sure you can answer that as a general matter. Most great many creditor types, businesses, follow the Daily Journal of Commerce very closely. So I think a certain portion of the, at least businesses, you know, would see notices there.
Are potential family members who might be involved otherwise notified of the pending estate?
Yes.
Yes.
That's a separate section.
That's a totally different.
They have to be notified and run.
They are sent specific individual notice.
My
this is a notice to credit.
My concern has evaporated. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Further discussion?
Chairman.
Representative Frommeyer.
Yeah, I want to call the committee's attention to two things. One is a letter to me from Stan Ellison who testified here earlier. I asked a question about the origin of this. Dennis was unable to find it in the Uniform Probate Code. Mr. Allison sent me a copy of the bar's book on probating estates, which contains the advisory committee's comments on this. The point back to this provision was taken from the Washington Probate Code.
I'm worried.
Probate.
I didn't know if you're going to say it, but it's on page 347.
And it also, the comment also makes it clear that the redraft would do what the original should have done. Okay, can I just submit this for the committee record?
Yes, it'll be made part of the record. Further discussion? Clerk will call the roll.
Representative Brumenauer?
Aye.
Judith?
Aye.
Frommeyer?
Aye.
Kungowski?
Here. Aye.
Lombard?
Aye.
Richards?
Aye.
Rutherford?
Aye.
Gardner?
Aye.
Myers?
Aye. Approved. We'll take one more and then we'll recess shortly so our clerk can correct it. 2271.
Mr. Chairman, 2271 was heard by Subcommittee C on February 1st. The bill deals with ORS 114.305, which enumerates the powers of the personal representative, and it also deals with ORS 126.313, which enumerates the powers of conservator. The bill adds, or at least makes more specific, one new power to the list, the power to prosecute tort claims, including personal injury and wrongful death. In the case in which there's a personal representative. The existing law may or may not provide this power. In any case, this bill would make it explicit so that the personal representative could exercise the power by statute without the need for an additional court order. The subcommittee recommended the deletion of the word tort from line 27 on page 3 and the amendment of lines 5 and 6 on page 6 to read, quote, prosecute claims of the protected person, including those for his personal injury, close quote. The purpose of the subcommittee's amendment is, first, to not limit the personal representative to tort claims alone. For instance, contract claims might also be prosecuted. And second, to conform the language in both of the amendments. The subcommittee recommended a due pass as amended treatment.
Before we go on, Representative Blumenauer, would you form manage 2270, please? That's the bill we just got. Okay. The subcommittee's recommendation will be a motion to send the bill to the floor with a due pass as amended. Discussion on the motion. Representative Blumenauer?
Yeah, just a quick question. Did I understand, Dennis, for me, the language claims between those four? Personal injury, but excluding wrongful death.
On page 6?
Page 3, line 20.
Page 3.
The only omission was, we just deleted the word tort.
Just tort. That's
all
the only word that came out of that.
Right. And then on the other. Can you draft the language to
On my notes, I'll read it again if you'd like that. Page 6. Line 5 and 6, the language would read, prosecute claims of the protected person, including those for his personal injury. In other words, they're conformed.
Further discussion on the motion? Question is on motion to send the bill to the floor. The recommendation to do pass is amended. Clerk will call the roll.
Representative Blumenauer? Rudin.
Aye.
Schoenmeyer.
Aye.
Kandowski.
Aye.
Lombard.
Aye.
Richard.
Aye.
Rutherford.
Aye.
Gardner.
Aye.
Myers.
Aye. Approved. Representative Blumenauer.
Procedurally, I'd feel more comfortable if we had amendments, we're gonna make amendments, if we could have them available to us, at least we could see if there's any objection, just so the record shows that the amendments are incorporated. And I would also personally have a little bit of delay. Particularly since we have organized in the subcommittee, I would like to know if it'd be possible to have a copy of what Dennis has presented, even if it's in, you know, in crude form, just available to us so we can review as we come in. If it posed significant logistic problems, I would withdraw the request.
Well, let's take the first part of it first. From this point on, we will have the amendments in writing as they would appear, you know, in terms of the separate amendment sheet that would be prepared, and they would appear on the committee report. Is that agreeable?
Well, and we would be having an opportunity to...
Then the second part...
Three parts. See the amendments. Two, vote on the amendments.
The part for voting on the final call.
Yes.
All right.
And second, see, proceed. And third, having the summary of what happened in the subcommittee, statement of what the bill is designed to do.
All right. Do you want to have a separate, go back and have a separate vote on the amendments in this committee?
No.
All right. From this point on, we'll treat it that way. And the last part of your three-part commentary, I can't speak to, but I would think that Dennis could probably rough out.
What, obviously, you see me doing that, I have a little speech that I think covers all the important points. If it's okay with you, and if you want to follow along as I read it, I have no problem with xeroxing up my handwritten notes. But
why don't
I don't
want to,
I'd rather not ask the typist to type it all up.
I got no problem with the form, just having something available, hopefully, 2.5 minutes before we come in.
Well,
I would also, if in fact someone presented written testimony at the subcommittee hearing, that could be...
Nothing less than testimony.
So but if somebody does, I understand Earl spoke to what I was going to ask you about. And I got on. And I, Chairman, I would ask that I was not here on the prohibition or stand with the representative from Davis on that motion. And I would like to be opposing the motion and do so. Oh, what was the vote?
Objection.
All right.
Objection.
You're coming.
I think if people are not here, I do not think they should be able to be recorded as voting.
I agree with that.
I think that's technically correct.
Then Kudlowski wants to give this as a remonstrance, why I think that's appropriate.
What number on the tape is this conversation?
I think he should be. I think he should be allowed to explain to Representative Davis personally.
Oh, I
think
right.
He should explain to the committee why he wasn't here. And I want the number of the tape. That
Representative Blumenauer, your suggestions with respect to procedure are noted and followed.
Thank you.
And let's take a 5-minute recess. The last three bills.
Would you agree to that?
Committee will come to order. House Bill 2272 and House Bill 2273 are somewhat related. I think maybe we could consider them side by side. Representative Gardner.
I would think that that would probably not be appropriate due to the recommendations that came out of the subcommittee. One was, as I remember, was to be tabled, and the other one was due pass.
That is correct.
Is one a table?
That doesn't mean you're wrong, that doesn't mean you're wrong at all.
Well, go ahead, let's take 2272. And we're taking a long time anyway, so go ahead.
House Bill 2272 was heard by Subcommittee C on February 1st. The bill deals with the requirement of notice to parents, children, spouses in the case of the appointment of a guardian or conservator to someone other than a minor. Existing law, ORS 126.127 and 126.187, requires that these named categories of persons be notified before the appointment is made. The proposed amendment would require that they be notified if their whereabouts are known or if they can be found. One is different from the other, but that's the general gist of it. The subcommittee recommended by a one-vote margin that this bill be tabled. The apparent reason for the recommendation was the feeling that the bill reduces the impetus to find and notify persons who may be affected and who probably would be concerned if they knew of the proposed appointment or removal. The committee should also be aware of the provisions of House Bill 2273, which was not recommended for tabling, although its language was not that much different.
Somebody who's on the subcommittee can argue these opposite positions.
I believe Representative Gardner made the motion to table in 2272. Would you care to
comment?
Speak to that question, Representative Gardner?
Okay. ORS 126.007 is the notice provision. It has several means of notice. The first means is by personal notice by certified mail. The second means of notice, in the case where the person cannot be found, is by publication in a newspaper of general circulation. This bill, in essence, in my opinion, would delete the requirement of notice by publication. That's what it comes down to. My feeling, and I guess the feeling of the other four members of the subcommittee, were, first of all, that that wasn't good social policy, and secondly, that there were potential, at least in my mind, due process problems with not at least making a very cursory attempt to give notice, at least by publication.
The effect of the amendments would be to make the, in effect, the test for publication to be the test for notice at all.
No, I think he's correct. I'm just looking at it. Yeah, I think his assessment is correct.
Further discussion on the bill before I ask for a motion to table for a formal vote up or down.
Could I just explain, because I was on the opposite side of that.
Yes, please do.
My principal reason for being on the opposite side of that was that, again, speaking more from personal experience, that publication in these matters is really quite expensive. And I think my last bill on one of these was about $54 in a publication of notice situation. And publication is called for, even if you know, in a practical manner, that a parent or husband or wife, whatever the relative may be, that they are out of state, that they're long gone, they've gone to the Southland or Northland or wherever. You're still required, in most instances here, the public. I was not happy with the language in the draft. I thought it was a very sloppy job of drafting in 2272. I recall my suggestion was that if it be resurrected, that it be done so with amended language similar to 2273 that would require a showing of due diligence court, the due diligence was exercised to attempt to find particular individuals, and if the court was satisfied that due diligence had been exercised and that the individual could not be found, then that the court by order, a formal court order, could waive the publication clause. I thought there was sufficient protection in the requirement of due diligence and the requirement of court order to waive the publication.
Further discussion? Is there a motion on the bill? So moved.
Mr. Chairman, don't we take the subcommittee action as a motion?
Well, technically, the motion to table is not debatable, so unless we amend our House committee rules, I'm deferring taking the motion to table until we've had some general discussion.
I'm not doing it, though, if you have something further, because I'm...
Motion is to table?
Yeah, if discussion's through.
Is there anybody else before I take the motion? Motion is to table. Clerk will call the roll.
Representative Dugan?
Aye.
Trenmeyer?
No.
Kulongowski?
Aye.
Lombard?
No.
Richards?
Aye.
Gardner?
Aye.
Myers?
Aye. Table. 2273.
Mr. Chairman, with respect to 2273, we have some testimony that didn't get here in time from Paul Meyer of the ACLU. Can I distribute that?
Yes, please. Sir.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Lombard.
It would be my feeling, since I was, as I recall, on the prevailing side on 2273, would a due pass on that, and certainly if we're going to table 2272 that deals with the notice provisions for parents in regular guardianship or conservatorship, that we ought not to have different change, different law for minors, and so I would move with table 2273 also.
All right, I'll defer accepting that motion for the moment to see if there's any discussion on the committee. Paul Meyer has a pardon. Go ahead.
On 2273, this bill was heard by Subcommittee C on February 1st. It deals with notice to living parents of a minor in the case of a proposed appointment of a guardian for the minor. ORS 126.070 requires notice to the living parents. The bill adds the words, unless the court finds that the address or identity of the parent is not known. The subcommittee recommended an amendment that reads as follows, and is, I might interject in the future, you'll have the text of the proposed amendment in front of you. For today, I'll read it to you. Unless the court finds that the address or identity of the parent cannot be determined after a diligent search has been made. Now, if you'll read the text of Mr. Meyer's presentation, it's basically the same thing, only it goes into more detail, more specific. So essentially you have two alternative forms of language in front of you. If you chose to accept the subcommittee's recommendation to do pass as amended.
Further discussion? Is there a motion on 2273?
Yeah, I would move to table.
Clerk will call the roll.
Representative Dugan?
No.
Trenmeyer?
No.
Kulongowski?
Aye.
Lombard?
Aye.
Richards?
Aye.
Rutherford?
Excuse.
Oh, sorry. Gardner?
Aye.
Myers?
Aye. Table. 2274. Mr. Bromka.
Mr. Chairman, House Bill 2274 was heard by Subcommittee C on February 1st. The bill deals with small estates, that is, estates of $10,000 or less, that because of their small size or amount, need not go through probate. 114.515 at the present time limits small estates to $5,000 of personal property, $10,000 of real property, or $10,000 in total. In the case of a small estate, this is explanatory material, heirs and or devisees may take the property directly without probate, although they are subject to creditors' claims. The mechanism used to accomplish this is an affidavit filed with the court, and the affidavit must recite information required by ORS 114.525. The bill would define the word estate on lines 10 and 11 of page 2, It would increase the limit on allowable limit on personal property to $10,000. It would require that a copy of the will be filed, along with the other documents required. It would require the filing of a copy of the affidavit in each county in which the estate has real property, and it would add a housekeeping amendment to 144.555. The subcommittee recommended several amendments to the bill, and again, I apologize for not having the language of the amendments before you.
Why don't you just take them in order so the members can note them on their copies.
Okay. On page 2, line 11, add the words, in Oregon, at the end.
Let's take these amendments one by one in accordance with revised procedure. Is there any objection to that amendment?
Just a general question. There must have been at least 4 or 5 bills in the last time relating to this section of the code, as I recall. I'm trying to recall the people who testified from the state that had the interest in this bill, because I want to know if they were here to testify.
Public Welfare Division was here, and the Department of Revenue.
Yeah, this time or last time?
This time.
And they're in favor of this?
Well,
not about this.
I don't think they have any concern with the basic structure. They wanted some. Public Welfare submitted a proposed amendment which would have conditioned the effectiveness of the affidavit to transfer the property on the division actually having received notice. They were complaining that oftentimes the notice, which is required to be mailed to the division, Salem is left with some branch office.
Just as a matter of procedure, Tim, we'll get to that motion later, because later in the bill there's a motion.
No, my real concern was the Department of Revenue president at a hearing on this bill. They're usually the ones that we test.
And their requested amendment was being proposed to be adopted. Revenue, did you say?
Revenue and welfare.
Yeah. All right, line 11.
On page 2.
Delete the period and add the words in Oregon. Period. Any objection to that amendment? Adopted.
On page 2, line 34, delete the words any jurisdiction and add the word Oregon. The point of that would be to explicitly authorize small estate procedure rather than full probate for an out-of-state estate that has only a small amount of property in Oregon. That is to say, the 33 and 34 would say, state that an application or petition for the appointment of a personal representative has not been granted in Oregon as opposed to in any jurisdiction.
No reason to deprive a state in Oregon of entitlement to people under this act simply because they're not going to answer it or proceeding in some other state. Any objection to that amendment? Adopted.
On page 3, lines 12 and 13, the subcommittee recommended that the words estate administration be added after public welfare division, thereby further specifying to what division of the public, or what subsection of public welfare division should receive the affidavit.
What was that administration?
Estate administration. You might take that to mean estate administration section of the public welfare division. The problem that we heard was that the mail just wasn't getting through to the right section. And the subcommittee further recommended to add the words after and the words to the Department of Revenue, Salem, Oregon, semicolon, and. In other words, adding another addressee for the, or another recipient of the affidavit.
That was Revenue's requested amendment, as all they wrote.
Discussion, Mr. Chairman, before you ask me.
Representative Bugis.
Just looking at that language, as I remember, I think I made the motion, but it seems to me like we kind of got a little close to the forest, and I think maybe for purposes of clarity, since that smacks of a kind of a legalism, a state administration, what we might say to clarify that, just for purposes of discussion, Public Welfare Division, comma, State Administration Department, or something like that.
Can I speak to that?
Mr. Brown.
In terms of the technical word that you attached to that, you have the Department of Human Resources, you have the Public Welfare Division, and you have the Estate Administration Section. There's only one problem. The former head of the Human Resources, Department of Human Resources, chopped off the word section wherever he found it. So now there isn't any more. That word is not used. It's thought of, conceptually, it's there, but it's not there technically.
Representative Bugis moves that the word section be added. Any objection? So the motion then before us from the subcommittee as amended would be to add Public Welfare Division, comma, Estate Administration Section, comma, Salem, Oregon, and to the Department of Revenue, Salem, Oregon, semicolon, and. Did I go too fast for you on this?
Oh.
I'd like to come back to that
just
section.
Just a point of inquiry, Mr. Chairman, are we going to confuse the Public Welfare Division by having the section after the State Administration?
I'm sure it doesn't know.
We'll back up. You know, I understood that technically they do not refer to it as section. I personally think the statute would be clearer with it in there, and I'm not sure it makes any difference one way or the other. But Representative Bugis, do you want to make the motion?
I'll make the motion. We do that because if they want to disregard, I think here we're looking for clarity of instruction to an attorney. And I believe this makes it clearer to them.
With or without?
With the word. I think we need some modification to the words of the administration.
The motion is to add the word section to the proposed amendment, which would add a state administration after Public Welfare Division. Is there any objection to the amendment, adding the word section? All right. The amendment then, as amended, would be to add a state administration section after Public Welfare Division, preceded and followed by commas, line 13, and to the Department of Revenue, Salem, Oregon, semicolon, and. Any objection to that amendment? Adopted. Is that the end of the subcommittee amendments?
That's the end of the subcommittee amendments, and their recommendations do pass as amended.
Is there a motion on 2274?
Question, Mr. Chairman.
The motion is to send the bill to the floor with a do pass recommendation as amended. Representative Richards?
Mr. Chairman, or Dennis, maybe you could explain for us. It doesn't make much sense to me to leave the aggregate value of the estate at $10,000 when you increase.
Representative Blomberg, I think you had a comment on that when we heard it subcommittee.
It's line 16.
Yeah. Representative Rumsfeld, one of the two of you had a feeling on that.
Well, no, my comment, as I recall at that time, was that it didn't make much sense to have a different value for real property and a different value for personal property, which was the old way it was, and that as a practical matter, the only real property that we ever get to deal with under this provision is vacant property, because there isn't any such thing as improved property anymore with a value of $10,000 or less. I think you have to keep the aggregate in there, though. You could rewrite the whole thing, I suppose, and just say real or personal property having an aggregate value of $10,000. I think we are, the way it is, it's wordy. It's probably saying more than it has to.
I just didn't understand, Mr. Chairman, why they would go to the trouble of amending and increasing the allowable value of personal property, which raises it to the same amount as aggregate. I didn't understand the purpose for doing that.
It could be shortened, but if there's a hard way of doing it, you've got to understand lawyers are doing that way. They want to simplify.
Well, I'm not sure that's quite her point. I would understand her point to be that if you're going to permit a larger amount of personal fee, at the same time the permitted aggregate ought to rise, the aggregate of both personal and realty ought to go up also.
Well, you could argue that.
And I suppose that the reason it's in this form is that there are probably a number of estates that are processed through this that are composed of only personal property. And it
increases the number of those states that can be handled by this particular mechanism.
Just so I understand, oh, I'm sorry.
Representative Kulongoski.
If the estate is a personal property now, 10,000 or less, you can put it through this section. If it's real property, 10,000 or less, you can put it through. If it's 5,000 of personal and 5,000 of real, you can put it through this section. But what happens if you've got 10,000 personal and 10,000 real?
You got a big estate.
You're over the $20,000 limit.
You're over the $10,000
limit. Yeah, it's on the $10,000 limit. I'm trying to figure out the situation in which the aggregate was there under the old section. I mean, if it's five and ten, you're still over the...
Right, that's right.
I mean, there must have been some reason originally why that was in there. Right. Mark's got the answer for me.
Maybe. I would just guess that there's probably a reticence. There was a reticence on the part of the people who originally drafted this to be passing a large amount of real estate by affidavit. They wanted estates with real estate to be going through probate. And Representative Longbard's comment about only talking about vacant lots is probably well taken in the sense that there isn't too much real estate that's worth less than $10,000. And and that was a value judgment that they made at that time. Whereas personal property, I think, is, you know, there's usually less problems, I would think, involved with personal property than real estate, as far as gleaning and things like that go.
Further discussion? Subcommittee's recommendation, together with the separately approved amendments, then is a motion before us to send the bill to the floor with a due pass as amended recommendation. Further discussion.
What is ORS 114.5?
Okay, that is a section which states that persons to whom property is paid subject to this whole small estate procedure are answerable to the extent of value received to creditors who make claims within 4 months, or answerable to the personal representative if one is eventually appointed. It means that if you get the property under this procedure, it's not being clear if there's somebody coming after you within 4 months.
That wouldn't have been the way it was before?
That is. Oh, okay. That is the way it is. And so the existing language of 4.5.4.5 and 5.5.5 don't quite tie together. There should be a cross-reference to tie them together, and the cross-reference is provided by the amendment in the bill.
It's being interpreted as if that
language
is there.
That's correct.
Further discussion? Clerk, call the roll.
Representative Buzin?
Aye.
Cronmeyer?
Aye.
Kulongoski?
Aye.
Longbard?
Aye.
Richards?
Aye.
Gardner?
Aye.
Cronmeyer?
Aye. Let's see, Representative Kulongoski, would you floor manage 2271, adding the claim of the power relating to prosecution of claims? And Representative Cronmeyer, would you floor manage 2274, what we just approved? The committee will be meeting as a full committee beginning tomorrow and hopefully concluding Monday to consider the bar's practice and procedure bills. There's nothing further at this time. We'll adjourn until 1:30 tomorrow.